AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, as you've been hearing, the UK and the EU yesterday struck a post-Brexit cooperation deal across a number of areas, including food, fishing and security. The deal will see most checks on food and drink moving between the EU and the UK removed, including, of course, between Northern Ireland and Britain. European fishing vessels will also have access to Britain's fishing waters for a further 12 years. Unsurprisingly, the deal has not been welcomed from the Brexiteer side of the argument, but has been roundly praised on the other side. Joining us now for analysis of all of this is Simon Coveney, former Taoiseach, Minister for Foreign Affairs and Defence, and of course, former Brexit negotiator for the Irish government. Simon, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me on. Good to talk to you.
Now, let's talk about winners and losers here, because you always hope in a deal it's a win-win. But looking at some of the British newspapers, it doesn't look like a win for Britain from the Brexiteer point of view. Starmer surrender in the Daily Mail. Keir's abject surrender is a betrayal of Brexit Britain from the Daily Express. Done up like a kipper from the Sun. And PM's in a tight spot in the Daily Star. So, not welcomed by the Brexiteers,
but I mean, none of that's a surprise. You know, like this is a return to the usual Brexit language that some media outlets in the UK have had ever since the decision to leave the European Union nearly a decade ago. And so it's predictable that when a Labour Prime Minister wants to try to reset the relationship with the EU, knows that he needs to make some compromise to do that, but also to get some wins. Which the UK has got in this deal, that a certain segment of British media will focus on one element of this, which is solely around British sovereignty and this obsession that some people in the UK seem to have for separation, complete separation from the European Union, even though the European Union is a close neighbour and close friend of the United Kingdom, by far the largest trading partner of the United Kingdom, by far the most important security partner of the United Kingdom. Despite all of those realities, there are some in the British system that seem to see a separation from the European Union as a way of expressing British sovereignty and narrow British nationalism. And it's great to see a British Prime Minister willing to take the political risk to face down that kind of criticism and do what's right for Britain, in my view. And I'm someone who cares about Britain. I've been to university there. I have family there. I have many friends in the British political system. And, you know, I think this is a win-win for both sides. You know, the European Union is weaker without a closer partnership with the United Kingdom. And certainly the United Kingdom is weaker without the kind of partnership that I think Keir Starmer is now trying to rebuild after a whole series of British prime ministers from, you know, Rishi Sunak to Liz Truss to Boris Johnson to Theresa May, who all were either forced or wanted to, you know, however you see it, to actually try to sever a whole load of very important historic relationships and on cooperation between the UK and the EU. So look, I mean, nobody who's realistic, I think, sees the United Kingdom rejoining the European Union, anything like the near future. But I think what Keir Starmer has done and the team around him is to at least begin a conversation and to agree some initial steps, which is all we've got really this week, let's be honest. To try to apply more pragmatism to the relationship between two close neighbours who, given the instability in the world today, need to be working together on things like security and defence, on trying to smooth trade while at the same time respecting the decision of the British people to leave.
Is that really what is driving this, the need for greater security cooperation And that's what Britain needed more maybe than it needed any kind of nuance in the trade relations. That's really, it's about defence and security.
It's not only about defence and security. I think the British economy is under, you know, quite a lot of pressure at the moment. We've seen trade, particularly on the agri-food side, which is very relevant to Ireland, reduce significantly since the UK left the European Union. And that's because there are practical costs here. You know, if you're exporting from the UK into the EU or vice versa, there is a significant amount of bureaucracy and cost that's time consuming and has essentially forced many European or EU countries, I should say, to diversify trade away from the UK to countries where the EU has free trade agreements and likewise to prevent some British companies also trading into the EU. Like we've seen that real practical impact on the British economy. And so, you know, the what's happening in this new agreement is not Britain rejoining the single market or customs union, unfortunately, from my perspective, because I think that would be very good for trade. But at least they are dealing with some of the obstacles in having an agreement around what's called an SPS agreement, which is the sanitary and phytosanitary agreement.
In practical terms, what does it mean? Like for people in the Republic who are doing business cross-border or cross-channel, what practical difference does it make?
I mean, first of all, it makes a practical difference to a lot of people, right? So there are about 200,000 people in Ireland employed linked to the direct trade across the Irish Sea with Britain. So like that's not an insignificant amount of people. And so what this means for food companies in Ireland selling into the UK and for food companies in the UK selling into Ireland, and that is a significant trade relationship. Just to give you a sense, it's worth about 10 to 12 billion euros a year. So, you know, Ireland sells about 6.5 billion euros worth of food and drink each year. And we purchase about 5 billion from the UK. So that's a significant trade. Some of it comes through Northern Ireland. Some of it comes across the Irish Sea directly. And most of that trade now currently has a requirement on businesses to get health certification to facilitate inspections of consignments or at least a percentage of those when they're entering British ports. And the paperwork around that and cost around that is quite significant. We are now looking to remove an awful lot of that bureaucracy, delay and cost. And that's a good thing in both directions, by the way. It's also a very good thing for Northern Ireland in terms of the politics of the Windsor Framework, which was previously the protocol, where an awful lot of businesses in Northern Ireland have been deeply frustrated with having any checks at all on goods coming from Great Britain into Northern Ireland and then potentially moving on south into the Republic and indeed ending up in some other part of the EU single market. So let's not forget that Northern Ireland, while of course part of the United Kingdom and leaving the European Union with the rest of the United Kingdom, has remained in essence as part of the EU single market for goods in order to prevent any checks required on the border between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. That has resulted in a certain number of checks on goods coming from Great Britain into Northern Ireland, particularly in the food space, and some products banned actually from trading from GB into Northern Ireland, such as sausage, meat, and so on. So all of that is now being freed up, and like this is good news from an Irish perspective. How do you still there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I'm just wondering whether or not.
Sorry.
There are
this is very good news from an Irish perspective. Yeah. You know, in the context of in many ways the oversized food and drink sector in Ireland, you know, which is a big part of our economy, and the UK is by far our largest market in terms of food and drinks exports. 38% of all of our food and drinks exports out of Ireland goes to the UK.
Okay, but look at it in a more globally political way. What Starmer has done in doing this deal, he's shafted the fishing industry in Britain. I mean, I heard a great Yarmouth fisherman yesterday saying, roll on, Nigel Farage. This has been an absolute betrayal. Another 12 years of Europe ravishing our fisheries, which they will do with their big ships. They'll come in and take our fish. There won't be sustainable fishing. It's
yeah, that's not actually that accurate a reflection, to be honest.
I mean, that's what he said. I'm not saying it is.
And let me explain that. So it is true that that the EU, and I suspect that the pressure has come from France in particular, but you know, Irish fishing fleets will also benefit from this. You know, what there was, fishing was probably the most contentious issue in the end to get a Brexit deal across the line. And what was agreed was that there would be temporary access of EU fishing boats into UK waters up until June of 2026. Each year, the UK would provide licenses, essentially, for French boats or Irish boats or some Spanish boats into fishing grounds that traditionally they would have fished in. That was limited, by the way. It wasn't the full access that was there previously, but there was some access. And the UK agreed that up until June, I think, of 2026, they would provide licenses to do that.
Well, this fisherman was explaining that they were hanging on by their fingernails with a view to getting back their fisheries fully in 2026. Hanging on by their fingernails. Now, another 12 years, they won't be able to hang on for 12 years.
Well, look, I mean, every deal involves some give and take. Like, the gain for the British fishing industry is that they can now sell fish that they catch in British waters into EU markets in a much more streamlined way that reduces costs around checks and actually gives access to certain products that they weren't able to get into the EU market at all. And so, you know, the biggest market for fish caught in UK waters that outside of the UK core market itself is, of course, the European Union. And so the fishing industries, if you speak to processors now, for example, they will be looking at EU markets in a more optimistic way than they would have previously because of the actual border checks being reduced, costs being reduced, checks being reduced and so on. So like there are gains and losses here. But I think on balance, there are more gains than losses,
even for
the UK fishing industry.
The final question is about the, you know, Britain left the EU. There should be a price to be paid for that. And one of the prices was they'd have to queue up at the rest of the world passport controls. Now they're getting access to the EU passport controls. And I'm just thinking, why wouldn't anyone then go to leave the EU if you get such a nice package of perks for leaving?
Well, look, anybody who travels around Europe as I do a bit, you know, will see long queues of British passport holders when Irish passport holders can walk straight by.
That gave us a great sense of schadenfreude, it has to be said, when we watched those. We said it serves them right for leaving.
But and look, they're being treated like any other country outside of the European Union. You know, even though they find that very frustrating. I mean, you know, can I say that like they're what was announced this week was an initial ambition to try to put more what are called passport e-gates in place in European airports that can allow British citizens to move faster through airports. I don't think we're going to really see that take effect until next year at the earliest.
All right.
But I mean, you know, let's not exaggerate either, you know, what's been done here this week. It is an important step forward on things like an SBS agreement, a fishing agreement, on security and defence. There's a new ambition around youth travel and Erasmus programmes so that young British people can travel and work and study around the European Union. But again, that's not a done deal yet. There's work to be done on it. There's a really important deal in relation to carbon markets linkage, which sounds very technical, but effectively it's the UK agreeing to work with the EU in relation to a carbon trading system, which I think is very important and particularly important for Ireland, by the way, in the context of Northern Ireland and, you know, a joint energy markets and so on. So look, we're making some progress here, but let's not for 1 minute pretend that this is the equivalent of having the UK back in the European Union. It's not. There is no suggestion of a shared customs union, a shared single market. And so we will still have barriers to trade. But I think we are seeing, I hope, the beginning of a much more pragmatic and much more friendly relationship between the UK and the EU, which is very, very good news for Ireland.
Simon Coveney, former Taoiseach Minister for Foreign Affairs and Defence and a former Brexit negotiator for the Irish government. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.